What happened was, the last year that I was with General Foods, so I had a few shows that weren't as hot. But I still had a lot of great shows.
So this was in the middle 40s? The so-called famous Jack Benny slump, that you moved from number one to number seven.
Or something like that, or something. Or they thought, so they practically said to me, watch it a little bit, because some of the shows, as though every show had to be perfect, you know. See, I spoiled them. So the minute they said that, and then they went back to New York. Now, they didn't have an option. The thing was over, but they did want to give me a new contract. But the way they said to me, just watch a little bit, I got mad. So I said to my manager, I said, let's get another sponsor. I don't want to be with them. And we wired them on the train as they were going back that we will not be with them anymore, because right away I had like four or five big offers from Lucky Strike, from everybody, and we grabbed Lucky Strike immediately.
Welcome to Breaking Walls, episode 151. My name is James Scully. Tonight on Breaking Walls, it's the spring of 1944. And Jack Benny's sponsor, General Foods, thinks he's in a slump. Benny got mad, and it changed the broadcasting landscape forever. Tonight, we'll find out how and why. If this is your first time listening to Breaking Walls, welcome to the show. You can find this series on every podcasting platform and at thewallbreakers.com. Tonight's opening song is Modest Mussorgsky's The Hunt on Fowl's Legs, played by Federico Colli and part of Mussorgsky's Pictures at an Exhibition. Join the Breaking Walls Facebook group to keep in touch with news, snippets, photos, and other additions to the podcast at facebook.com/group/thewallbreakers. And the first 8 chapters of Burning Gotham are out everywhere you can get a podcast and at burninggotham.com. It was a 2022 Tribeca Film Festival audio selection. You can also support these shows for as little as $1 per month at patreon.com/thewallbreakers.
Instead of a big, ugly glass picture tube, you saw the performers in your own mind. You painted your own big-as-life version of each moment with that loving creative brush we call imagination.
In March of 1932, Jack Benny was headlining on Broadway as part of Earl Carroll's Vanities when Ed Sullivan invited him to appear on Ed's radio show. At the time, Benny was uninterested in radio, but he went on Sullivan's quarter-hour show March 19, 1932 as a favor. His first line was, "Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jack Benny talking. There will be a slight pause while you say, who cares?"
I quit a big show, Earl Carroll's Vanities. I had about 20 weeks to go, and I was making, $1,500 or $1,700 a week, even then, before radio. And that was a lot of money. And I realized that the coming thing now was radio, and I better get into it. And I went to Earl Carroll, Carroll's Vanities, and I asked for a release. He finally gave it to me. And I showed him why he could. I said, "You're going to play some small towns now. We've played New York and the big city. You really don't need it. You'll save $1,500 a week, and I'll try to get on radio."
But Canada Dry Ginger Ale's advertising agency heard Benny and offered him a show.
And I got it through the Ed Sullivan show.
The sponsor?
The Canada Dry Ginger Ale. They heard me on the Ed Sullivan show. And as soon as that show was over, they called me and made me an offer. What happened was, I was in New York, and Ed said, "Jack, why don't you come on my show?" He did a sports show or something. I said, "What will we do?" He said, "What'll we do?" He said, "Oh, let you and I sit down. We'll write something." So we sat down, and there wasn't much to the show except little talk, but evidently the agency for Canada Dry Ginger Ale perhaps liked my speaking voice, because that's all they could go by.
Right.
And they made me the offer right away.
Benny debuted on NBC's Blue Network on May 2nd, 1932.
Dry Canada Dry, the champagne of ginger ales, presents a series of programs to advertise the new made-to-order Canada Dry, which you can now buy by the glass at drugstores and soda fountains. This series will feature George Olson and his music, Miss Ethel Chute, the star of many Broadway successes, and that suave comedian, dry humorist, and famous master of ceremonies, Jack Benny.
Thank you, Mr. Thorgerson. That's pretty good from a man who doesn't even know me. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jack Benny talking and making my first appearance on the air professionally. By that, I mean I'm finally getting paid, which, of course, will be a great relief to my creditors. I really don't know why I'm here. I'm supposed to be a sort of a master of ceremonies and tell you all the things that will happen, which would happen anyway. I must introduce the different artists who could easily introduce themselves and also talk about the Canada Dry made-to-order by the glass, which is a waste of time, as you know all about it. You drink it, like it, and don't want to hear about it. So, ladies and gentlemen, a master of ceremonies is really a fellow who is unemployed and gets paid for it.
This initial series aired Mondays and Wednesdays. Benny's wife of 5 years, Sadie Marks, who performed with him on vaudeville, joined the cast on August 3rd as Mary Livingston.
Mary always sort of ran my life, even though she wasn't supposedly married to me.
In storyline, she was a young Benny fan from Plainfield, New Jersey. Eventually, she read humorous poetry and letters from her mother, and much later, she would become a main deflator of Benny's ego. On October 30th, 1932, the show moved to CBS. During this time, Benny began ribbing his sponsor in a gentle, good-natured way. Canada Dry got upset, and despite a rating in radio's top 20, they canceled the show after January 26th, 1933. Chevrolet, which had recently lost Al Jolson, was waiting in the wings. On Friday, March 17, 1933, at 10 p.m. from New York, Benny debuted with the Chevrolet program over NBC's Red Network. The June 23, 1933 episode was the last of the season, as well as Mary Livingston's 28th birthday. Howard Clanny was the announcer, with Frank Black as the orchestra leader and James Melton as the tenor.
Played by Frank Black's orchestra. I don't know, I wish Frank would make those orchestra boys shave. You know, folks, I never saw so many beards in one orchestra. No, really, I mean, I don't know how they get their saxophones in their mouths. I'm not kidding, huh?
Jack.
Yes, Mary?
Look at these. Aren't they beautiful?
Why, Mary, what are you doing with all those flowers?
Well, it's my birthday today, Jack.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I nearly forgot.
And thanks for the card.
Did you like the card I sent you, Mary?
Yes, but my name isn't Easter.
Well, I happen to have one left over, you know.
Oh, that's all right. What are you giving me for a present?
Well, let's see, Mary. How old are you today?
21.
21. I'll say, I've got a great idea. It's too late to buy you something, but I'll give you a dollar for each year. See, here it is. Now, 5, 10, 20, 21.
Well, that's awfully nice of you, Jack. And, gee, are you lucky?
Why?
Well, if I told you my right age, you'd owe me $6 more.
Mary, make believe you're 60 and give me back $5, would you? Well, folks, you can never tell a person's age. I don't know, a man is as old as he looks and a woman is as old as she likes.
So congratulations, Mary.
Thanks, Howard.
Now, here are a couple of little remembrances.
Gee, a ring and a book, thanks. What a pretty ring. But what's the book all about?
Well, that's to keep up the payments on the ring.
I gave him that joke, folks. You know, live and let live, you know.
Mary, I want to congratulate you, too. I want to give you...
Yes, Jimmy?
My very best wishes.
Well, anyway, Mary, you don't have to keep up the payments on that, you know. Say, I bet you got a lot of nice telegrams today, huh?
Yes, and birthday cards, too. You want me to read some to you?
Go ahead. You will, anyway.
Well, here's one I got from Howard. It says, Happy birthday, I must say. May many more come by your way. Because every minute of the day...
Someone buys the Chevrolet. Yes, that's a wonderful hit. It's a wonderful thought on Howard's part. I knew he'd get that in.
Oh, here's another card, Jack.
Another card? Read it. Read it, Mary.
It says, Happy birthday to the sweetest and fairest girl in all the world.
Who sent that?
I did.
You did?
Yes, no one knows me like I do.
I see. Mary, this being your birthday, really, why don't you do something? I mean, now tell us something about your life. I mean, I think everybody here in the studio would like to know something. Yeah.
Well, I was born in Plainfield, New Jersey on a very dark day.
Mm-hmm.
At first, I didn't know what it was all about.
Uh-huh.
And before I knew what had happened, I was 5 years old.
How time flies.
Yes, now on my fifth birthday, I said to myself, Toots, Plainfield isn't big enough for you, so I went to Elizabeth.
Elizabeth, New Jersey?
No, my Aunt Elizabeth.
Oh,
But there was nothing there for me, so I went to Trenton.
Oh, your Uncle Trenton?
Huh? No, Trenton, New Jersey.
Oh, well, I'm all mixed up. I don't know.
At Trenton, things were kind of dull, so I came back to Plainfield and stayed there until I was six.
Uh-huh.
And was I six? In fact, the doctor told me I would never reach seven.
How time flies. Mm-hmm.
But 7 o'clock came, and then eight, and I ate and ate and ate until I was nine.
Until you were nine, I see. And then what happened, huh?
Then 10 came along, and we started our program. So here I am, and it's only 10:15.
Oh, is that all, Mary?
Yes, that's all.
Applaud everybody.
When the show returned in the fall, it was on Sundays at 10 p.m. from New York. Benny's program slowly began to morph from variety into more developed comedic skits. He also started to show the character traits that would come to define his persona. Unfortunately, Chevrolet didn't like the series and fired him after the April 1st, 1934 episode. But the General Tire Company immediately scooped him up. Benny debuted on their program the following Friday, April 6th at 10 p.m. There, he first worked with announcer Don Wilson. Wilson would remain with Benny until 1965. Often the butt of weight-based jokes, Wilson's deep belly laugh could often be heard above the studio audience, and his deep, rich voice became a show trademark. This is audio from that April 6, 1934 episode.
And now, I want you to meet a most versatile gentleman, a man who has accomplished things.
You bet I have.
And a man who will probably make this the hottest program on the air, our janitor.
I tang to you. Maybe I'm in the wrong studio. Say, fella, what program is this?
General Tire.
Well, here I am. Doesn't that mean anything? Jack Benny is my name.
Pardon me, I didn't get that.
Jack Benny.
What is it again?
Constantine Acropolis.
Oh, Jack Benny. Yes, of course. Yes. Whom do you want to see?
I don't want to see anybody. I'm going to be the master of ceremonies on this program.
Well, that's news to me.
News to you. Say, didn't you see that article about me in the paper?
Oh, I seldom read the want ad.
Oh, it looks like going to have plenty of trouble here, too. Well, tell me, Mr. Wilson, what's your racket? I mean, what do you do on this program?
I sell General Tires.
No skidding.
That's good, is it? And they're not only skidless, but run on 30 to 40% less.
Hey, wait a minute. Listen, that reminds me, Wilson. You know, you being the announcer, I'd like to have an understanding right now before we go any further.
Well, what's that?
You see, Mr. Wilson, for the past 2 years, I've been having trouble with you announcers. I mean, you always insist on butting in with the advertising.
Oh, you won't have that trouble here, Mr. Benny.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. Of course, I don't mind if you find the right place for it, you know, but don't keep dragging it in every minute.
I'll remember that. But you'll have to admit that the General Tire is absolutely safe.
Yes, but you're not. So keep away from me with that advertising.
Okay.
Say, by the way, Wilson, I'd like to meet some of the people in the company. I mean, as long as I'm going to be here, you know.
Of course. Jack, I want you to meet Mr. Bester, the director of the orchestra.
Oh, glad to know you, Mr. Bester.
And the pleasure's all yours.
That's what you think, huh? So your name is Bester, eh? And the first name?
Don.
Don. Well, that's strange. Don. You're Don Bester, and he's Don Wilson. Well,
that's two Don and one to go.
That's good. Boy, are we hot tonight, and it's only our first program.
Jack had a basic philosophy, if I may divert here for a moment, that
certainly,
as I analyze it, it was obvious that this was his philosophy. The bigger he could make the supporting people that worked with him on the show, the bigger it made the Jack Benny show, and the bigger it made Jack Benny. Now, this is a leaf that I don't think any other comedian ever took out of Jack's book, and it was so sound and successful that I'm surprised somebody else didn't pick it up, too. But that was Jack. That was the generosity and the thoughtfulness and the great showmanship that was reflected in Jack's operation in all the years he was on the air.
That summer, Mary and Jack adopted their daughter, Joan. She was 2 weeks old. Jack later said in his autobiography that as Joan grew older, she came to look like he and Mary. She had Mary's face with Jack's blue eyes and his love for music. Benny, Don Wilson, and Mary Livingston worked together, along with tenor Frank Parker and orchestra leader Don Bester on the General Tire Show, until September 28, 1934. Then, General Foods came calling. They wanted Benny to help save a gelatin product of theirs called Jell-O, which was getting badly beaten by Knox Gelatin in sales. On October 14, 1934, Benny moved to Sunday nights at 7 p.m. for NBC's Blue Network. His rating immediately jumped into the top five. On April 7, 1935, the show was regularly broadcast from New York for the final time. The Jell-O program would be moving to Hollywood. Benny simultaneously made Broadway Melody of 1936, and It's in the Air on film. Until the mid-1930s, New York and Chicago were the main broadcasting hubs. Frank Nelson remembered early Hollywood radio.
But anyway, I did various things around town here. One that was very popular local show was The Witch's Tales. Paula Winslow, who was another gal from out here, and I did the leads in those for, about 2 years. That was the most envied show in town at that time. Now, this was before there was any transcontinental shows out of here. Mm-hmm. Finally, I had worked for John Swallow at KFAC-KFVD as an announcer, and John became the first head of NBC out here. And NBC at that time was just an office on the RKO lot, on the back lot, and we worked on sound stages initially, and then they built some sound stages strictly for radio right at the end of the RKO lot. That was the beginning, and they had a show out of here called the Hollywood on the Air show, which was the RKO show. First show out of Hollywood that was transcontinental, but it was not sponsored, except that RKO, really, it was their sponsorship, in effect. I used to do everything on that. I was the announcer. I filled in as a bit actor. And then if somebody didn't show up, I played that part, too. Did that for about, I guess about a year and a half. And then the first transcontinental show that was sponsored out of here was an original Marx Brothers show with Groucho and Chico, just the two of them in it.
Nelson began working with Benny in June of 1934.
I worked with Jack. First broadcast I ever did with him was in June of 1934.
No kidding.
Uh-huh. That's right.
Oh, my God.
At that time, he was doing a five-minute insert for an Eastern show. They had a little sketch where he was coming to California, and he meets this fellow on the train, and he's telling him what a big shot he is and how he's going to California, and he's going to do great things out there. And he says, you know, you're a very personable young man. He says, possibly I could do something for you. He says, my name's Jack Benny. What's yours? And I said, Clark Gable. And that was the opening sketch that we did.
Even in 1935, it was still more costly for shows to originate from Southern California. Here's actress Mary Jane Higby, who grew up in L.A. before moving to New York in 1937, explaining why.
Hollywood was not the center for radio in the early 30s when you were working there.
No, it certainly wasn't, because the telephone wires were not set up in a way that made it easy to broadcast from west to east, what they called the round robin, which I never understood or knew anything about till I started writing the book. And then I went to an engineer at NBC and said, look, why did it cost Eddie Cantor $1,200 more to broadcast from Hollywood than it did from New York? Because I'd found this out during research. And he said, well, it was the round robin, dear. And then he explained to me that that is the skein of telephone wires which form the network. Now, I had been speaking over those networks for like 30 years then, and I didn't know it. I think I had the idea that everything I said went right straight up to the roof and out and into the homes across the nation. I'd never really thought of it. But, of course, I knew the telephone company had something to do with it, but I didn't realize the extent that it played. And it was in 1937 that they learned to reverse the channels so that they could broadcast directly from the coast. And then there was a great rush of shows from New York to Hollywood. Unfortunately, it was the year I selected to go from Hollywood to New York, but that has been the pattern of my whole life experience. That out by now.
On November 3rd, 1935, Kenny Baker joined the show as the new singer. That year, Benny's show climbed to second overall in the ratings. The following year, Benny made the big broadcast of 1937 on film. And on October 4th, 1936, Phil Harris debuted as the new band leader.
J-E-L-L!
The Jell-O program, starring Jack Benny with Phil Harris and his orchestra. The orchestra opens the program with Here's Love in Your Eye from Jack's own picture, the big broadcast of 1937. the welcome sign. Strike up the band. Jack Benny's back with us again. Tonight marks the beginning of Jack's and Mary's third year on the air for Jell-O, and they're raring to go. And judging from all the letters we've had, you're raring to listen. So everybody's happy, and lots of the credit for that goes to you, our audience. Because your enthusiastic support of Jell-O makes it possible for us to continue these programs. The makers of Jell-O have asked me to thank you for your encouragement. And they've also asked me, as official Jell-O spokesman, to thank Jack and Mary for all their grand work in the past, and to wish them great good luck on the new series they begin tonight. So let's give six delicious cheers for the one and only genuine Jell-O, and for Jell-O's one and only Jack Benny. And now, ladies and gentlemen, after 4 months' vacation, we present to you the man the whole world is waiting to hear. New York, New York.
Who's on the air tonight, dear?
Jack Benny.
Oh, let's go to a movie.
Denver, Colorado.
Oh, Daddy, let's go see a picture show tonight.
Jack Benny is on the air.
I want to see Shirley Temple.
Glasgow, Indiana.
Heather, who's on the radio tonight?
Jack Benny.
Well, it'll cost me money, but let's go to the movies.
So now, ladies and gentlemen, we bring to you the man who has done more for moving pictures than any other comedian, Jack Benny.
Hey, Don. Don, would you mind trying one more town?
Which one?
Oh, anyone. Say, Waukegan, Illinois.
Okay. Waukegan, Illinois.
Who's on the air tonight, Mr. Benny?
My son, Jack. What a boy.
Oh, then you're not going to the movies tonight.
No, I saw the picture.
Do you want me to tune in any other time?
No, Don, that's enough. Well, hello again. This is Jack Benny, who has just returned from his vacation. And I want to tell you, it's great to be back again. Back with this old gang of mine.
You mean me, Jack?
I sure do. Let's give Wilson a nice big hand. Yes, sir. But no kidding, Don, you look swell. Fit as a bass fiddle. I don't know, you're so tan and rugged.
Thanks, Jack. You look tan and rugged, too. Where did you spend your vacation?
Well, Don, I worked most of the summer at the Paramount Studio, but I did manage to get a couple of weeks off. So I went to Saratoga Springs to the races. I wasn't very lucky, though.
Oh, Saratoga Springs. Oh, yes, I lost an uncle there once.
Mm. Well, I had to put up cash. And then I spent a couple of weeks camping up in the Adirondacks.
Oh, that's right. You told me you were going to do that.
Yeah, and by the way, Don, I want to thank you for lending me your shirt.
Oh, that's all right.
It was swell. I had the only tent with a soft collar. I told you that would go over, didn't I?
I like that a lot.
What have you been doing the last few months, Don?
Well, I had your job. I was master of ceremonies on the Jell-O Summer Show.
Oh, sure, sure.
You know, Jack, the Jell-O sales increased tremendously.
They did, huh?
Yes, sir. And that means that while I was telling jokes, more people than ever before went out and bought Jell-O.
While you were telling jokes. Well, that's a boost for the product only, you know. Come in.
Pardon me. Lewis is my name. I'm a reporter on the Radio Guide.
Oh, yes, yes.
I'm here to get an interview.
Oh, of course. Certainly. Pardon me, Don.
Has Kenny Baker arrived yet?
Not yet.
Thanks. I'll wait.
Hey, you know, I'm Jack Benny.
Yes, I know.
What were we talking about, Don?
Oh, you were saying how tan and rugged I look.
Oh, yeah, I thought we went further than that. Oh, Don, look who's here.
Hello, Don. Hello, Jack. Hello, everybody.
Hello, Mary.
Hello, Mary.
Well, Mary, it's good to see you. You're looking great. You haven't changed a bit.
You look good, too, Jack. Gee, you're so tan and ragged.
Mary, it's not ragged, it's rugged.
I know, but who can get a laugh?
Oh, Mary, always thinking of the program. Well, honey, have you had any fun? Did you have a nice vacation?
I did until I had to go to the hospital.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I didn't either, Mary.
Yeah, and you know, Jack, I had the cutest doctor you ever met.
Yeah?
You ought to see him. Blue eyes and a little mustache. What a doll.
A doll, huh?
Yeah. Last week he took my tonsils out. Gee, am I excited.
Why are you excited now?
Next week he's taking me out.
Oh.
Oh, boy, is he handsome.
Yeah, yeah.
Say, Jack.
What?
How do you get more tonsils?
You can't get any more.
Gee, I wish I had something else I didn't need.
Mary, cut it out, will you?
Pardon me, has Kenny Baker arrived yet?
No, Mr. Lewis, but if there's any information you want, I'm always glad to talk to a reporter.
No, thanks. I'll wait.
Who is that, Jack?
Oh, some fellow. Well, Mary, didn't you take a vacation at all last summer?
Oh, sure, Jack. I went to Coronado Beach for 3 weeks.
You did, huh?
Yeah, and I brought you a little present. Here.
Oh, Mary, my, what a pretty seashell. My goodness, huh? See, just what I needed. Well, let's see what it says on it. Oh, souvenir of Coronado Beach. Oh, gee.
And you know, Jack, if you put it up to your ear, you can hear music.
No kidding. I'll try it. Mary, I don't hear any music.
You don't?
No.
Oh, I forgot to tell you, you got to put your other ear up to a radio.
Oh, I see.
Well, Jack.
Yes, Don?
Phil Harris is here. You haven't forgotten about him, have you?
Oh, Phil, of course. Gee, I'm sorry. Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to meet a new addition to our little group, that famous orchestra leader, Phil Harris.
Yes, sir. Thank you. And thank you, Jack.
I want to apologize, Phil, for not introducing you sooner.
Oh, that's all right.
You know how it is, the opening program and all the nervousness and excitement and that reporter bothering me all the time, you know.
But, Jack, he didn't ask you for an interview.
That's what bothers him.
Does not. Oh, Mary, this is Phil Harris. Phil, this is Mary Livingston.
Hello, Mary. I've always wanted to meet you, and I'm very happy that we're going to be together.
Oh, thank you. I'll be glad to have dinner with you tonight.
Mary, he didn't ask you to go to dinner.
What a cheap guy.
Don't mind her. One thing I want to tell you, Phil, you're going to enjoy being with us. I never interfere with anything. You can always pick out your own music. In fact, you can be your own boss. And not only that, I'll always see that you get the best joke.
What joke?
The one about being your own boss.
Quiet. Well, Phil, how about a little number? Let's hear the new orchestra, eh?
All right, Jack. For the first number, we'll play Bye Bye Baby.
Well.
Pardon me, Mr. Benny. Has Kenny Baker arrived yet?
No, but I'll be glad
Never
to...
mind. I'll wait.
Play Don, or John. Or what's your first name, Phil?
Steve.
Oh, yes. Play Frank.
Reporter.
And like I say, I was terribly disappointed because I had brought the band all the way from New Orleans and found mm-hmm. out that they're using Wayne King instead of me on the Burns show. I don't even think that Jack was even aware of that. If he was, I never found mm-hmm. out about it. And I spent 16 or 17 of the most beautiful years of my life with him, a man who was one of a kind.
I think everyone would agree with you.
Well, what the hell, he proved that.
With Phil Harris in place, Benny's most famous cast was taking shape. That season, for the first time, Jack Benny's show was the number one program on radio, pulling a rating of 28.9.
Bye Bye Baby, played by Phil Harris and his orchestra, with Johnny Green at the piano on another program. And I want to tell you, Phil, as one musician to another, that's excellent music.
Thanks, Jack.
Say, Phil, you don't mind if I describe you to our listeners, do you? After all, they will be interested. You
know? No, but, well, don't build me up too much.
I won't. You don't know nothing yet. Well, anyway, folks, in describing Phil, I might say he's tall, rather good-looking. The ladies like him. But still, he's the kind of a guy you can trust with your best girl. If you can trust your best girl.
Oh, Jack, why don't you quit ribbing me?
I'm not ribbing you, Phil. I just happened to run across a joke.
Well, you're about due.
First time your orchestra laughed at anything, you know? My first program. Well, anyway, folks, I said before, Phil is the romantic type. Well, really, I didn't mean that, Phil. That was really a slip. I didn't mean that. Phil is a romantic type. Yes, sir. He's got fire in his eyes, a wave in his hair, a smile on his face.
And rhythm on the range.
Quiet, Irene.
Okay, Tim. You know, Jack, Phil Harris is cute, isn't he?
Yeah.
He looks just like my doctor.
Mary, forget that doctor, will you?
Gee, I can't get him off my mind. Oh, doctor.
I wish you'd stayed home till you came out of the ether.
Suppose I'm going to hear about that guy all day. For the next 3 years, Benny's show was never rated lower than second overall, and Jell-O became the most popular gelatin product sold in the U.S. In the spring of 1937, Eddie Anderson joined the cast in bit parts before becoming Rochester Van Jones, Benny's valet. Then, in June of 1939, famed tenor Kenny Baker decided to leave the show and join Fred Allen in New York. The sudden departure shocked Benny, but opened the door for some Irish serendipity.
You had to have something that he could magnify. In other words, when after Kenny Baker left, we couldn't find a singer. Benny, he always wanted a tenor. That's what Benny wanted, to fit in there. So we finally saw this picture. We went into the Bronx, and McNulty is his real name. And I went over, and we had dinner over at his house. And his old man, we call him Tiptoes McNulty. He was rushing the can, you know, Schaefer's beer. And at the first rehearsal, Jack looked over and he said, "Dennis?" And Dennis said, "Yes, please." Well, that was it. He had to find something that he could magnify.
Okay, it's 4:00. This is John Dunning. We're talking with Dennis Day in Los Angeles on KNUS in Denver. And we're being brought to you by the Public Service Company of Colorado. Did you start out to be a singer first or an actor first?
I started out as a singer. I was the new singer on the show replacing Kenny Baker. That's why the fact that they brought in Verna Felton to play the part of my mother, who was the buffer between myself and Jack Benny, because I was so inexperienced. Remember, I was fresh out of college. I'd never been in show business. I'd loved singing, been a singer in college in the Glee Club, and I had appeared on several radio shows in New York City, where I was born and raised. Been on the Larry Clinton Saturday Night Campus show 3 times.
When Dennis came in, you knew he was always vague about something.
When you went into that audition, how many other singers were there? How tough an audition was it?
Well, there were probably over 500 singers that they were auditioning or listening to recordings of their voice. That's what Jack and Mary and the agents told me later. They had auditioned over 500 singers. There were lots of other singers that were in contention with me, several from Canada, quite a number from our own country, you know, who were in contention for the job, because it was a very important job. He had Kenny Baker, who was a very big star at that time, and he had been made so by the Jack Benny program.
Do you know why he left?
He was the one who left, and everybody said, now, all the critics and everything said, who can follow Kenny Baker? Because he was a tremendous star at that time. Jack's first singer, at least before Kenny Baker, would be Frank Parker.
Mm-hmm.
And he had quite a number of other singers besides that. He had James Melton in the beginning. He had somebody else. He had a number of singers. Even after Kenny Baker left, he had auditioned quite a number of singers and tried somebody on the program. They didn't work out, and then I got the opportunity, and thank God, it worked.
In the fall of 1939, Dennis Day was hired as Jack's new singer. He was 23 and green. Writer Milt Josephsberg later noted that when he was hired, no one knew that Day had uncanny timing for feeding and punchlining jokes, nor did anyone know he was a great mimic. Benny entered the 1940s on the heels of five consecutive seasons, with ratings never being lower than second overall on radio. On March 13, 1940, he signed a new deal with General Foods, which paid him $18,500 weekly, and made him the direct employer of everyone on the program.